Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The situation with opioids in Northumberland has been described on this show as a crisis. We've heard from people representing law enforcement, a mental health worker, a doctor, two addicts, a street-level drug counselor, and the leader of an advocacy organization, along with two recovering addicts. The picture they paint is as painful as it is shocking. People in our community are dying. There are others facing drug addictions, and there were multiple calls for taking a comprehensive action to address the crisis. Today, we bring one more perspective to the table, and it is one of the most critical in this puzzle. The role of the public health providers. Why? Because these people are in charge of the drug strategy to tackle and reduce harm reduction in association with drugs and alcohol in the community from two important groups. I am pleased to welcome Megan Damon, the coordinator of the Halliburton Kawartha Lakes Northumberland Drug Strategy, and Catherine McDonald, substance and harm reduction coordinator at the Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having us.
I want to begin with the same question that I began all these interviews with, and that is, how would you describe the situation with opioids in Northumberland County? How about we start with you, Megan?
Sure. So I would say, as of 2017 already, we had the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care define this opioid situation in Ontario as a crisis. And I would say that kind of since then, we've had numerous communities and cities throughout the country and as well as in Ontario kind of call it crisis as well. Certainly in the Cobourg area specifically, we are looking at, we're trying to get this really good picture of data to help us kind of define crisis and to see what's happening locally. And when we do look at kind of data for the HKPR region as a whole, we do see an increased amount or number of deaths related to opioid overdoses. And we do see that increase from 2017 to 2018. I think when we kind of look at the crisis, we do need to look at things also around hospitalizations. We look at various factors to really see what defines crisis, and seeing hospitalizations increase in the complexity of substance use regionally, I think, yeah, we're seeing a lot.
Do you have any hard numbers to describe the local situation?
So when we look at kind of overdose-related deaths in the HKPR region, and the way we kind of receive data, we can't really break it down by community or county, so we do look at the HKPR district as a whole. So when we look at January to September of 2018, we did see 20 deaths related to opioid overdoses, and that's a 2.5 times the rate of deaths that we did see for 2017. And that's for the area as a whole.
So they've doubled in a year between 2017 and 2018.
Yeah.
And we have nothing for this year. And we're almost, 9 months in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We do have a delay with death kind of data with the coroner's office and that sort of thing. So what we do have for published data is looking at 2018.
Yeah. Okay.
But certainly we're seeing around hospital visits or ER visits as well. And when we look at the suspect drug overdose hospitalizations or ER visits, we did see that approximately 62% of those actually came from Northumberland County. So when we look at hospitalizations or ER visits across the HKPR district, okay, we are seeing a large majority happening in Northumberland specifically.
So the stat that I have is that there were about 140 emergency department visits in 2018. So you're saying 65% of those were from Northumberland stats.
Yeah, and I mean, that is one data. So the 145 confirmed emergency department visits, but then we can also look at other data sources that look at all opioid and other drugs suspected to contribute to that ER visit.
Yeah.
And so we have actually around 222 suspect drug overdose related emergency department visits, and that's where we're seeing that 62% in Northumberland County specifically. Yeah.
Some shocking numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, I'll give you a chance now to answer the same question, which originally was, how would you describe the situation from your perspective, the health unit's perspective?
So actually most of the data that Megan just shared comes from the health unit. We do have an epidemiologist on staff who is primarily looking at substance and harm reduction information. So the information that Megan shared comes from the hospital data that we get from across the district. So as Megan said, there's 62% of the 222 suspected drug overdoses did come from Northumberland County. We know that in 2018, there were also 29 hospitalizations that were confirmed as opioid-related causes. And that was also an increase from 2017. And Megan already shared the information about the deaths that we've experienced in our region as well. So certainly we've seen over the last couple years an increase, and 2017 to 2018 was a large jump. As Megan said, 2.5 times the number of related deaths. So it's come here, like it's coming. So
one of the things out of the previous interviews that's come up time and again is that we really don't have a clear picture. I mean, the statistics it's not to doubt the statistics you've given today. That's not the point. But I think, you know, the police talk about going into a situation and they're finding, you know, five or six naloxone kits when they arrive. And so there, that would indicate that there were five or six moments where somebody had overdosed and we don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm just wondering, how hard is it to collect data? Because both of you represent very, very large. I mean, we're talking Halliburton, Kawartha Lakes, and Northumberland. That's a massive area. Those are three huge counties.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get a realistic picture, or what are the challenges maybe to getting the data that gives us a clear picture of what is going on in our community here in Northumberland?
So certainly one of the things that we are working on currently, at the end of 2017, the government created funding for health units that was to go directly towards harm reduction program enhancements. And for that funding, it was specific to naloxone training and distribution, as well as creating an early warning surveillance system for opioid-related deaths, as well as creating a local response. So some of the things that we have been working on are those three items. So currently, because of the gaps in data, so the current data that the health unit gets comes from hospitals. So one of the challenges with that is that the data is can be coded differently depending on the hospital that you're at. So that can be a challenge. We also don't get real-time data. So we will get the data the following day or on a Monday, that sort of thing. So it's not real-time data. The other challenge is that the data is suspected overdoses and not necessarily, we don't necessarily have that confirmation that it's an opioid-related overdose at the time. EMS certainly has its own data. So the emergency medical services, police have data as well. So the main sources of data for us right now, or would be right now, are the hospitals, police, and EMS. So what we've been doing for our surveillance as well as our local response is we are working towards creating a HKPR district response task force that would include the police, EMS, the hospitals, the health unit, and Megan representing the drug strategy. We actually have our initial meeting at the beginning of September, and part of that is to try to identify the best way that we can share data together to get a truer picture of what is happening in our region. We all seem to have pieces of it. We need to bring it all together. But even once we have all of the official data, we are still missing information on what's happening in the community that emergency services are not necessarily seeing. So one of those things being overdoses that people are using naloxone for, but not calling emergency services for.
So that's what we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Let's just unpack that, because you've said a lot of important things. Mm-hmm. So this group that you're pulling together in September, the first meeting, you've got the police coming, you've got paramedics and emergency services, fire departments, and you've got the hospitals, which are all institutional. Where's the piece that deals with the community? The people who are actually maybe addicts or recovering addicts, the advocacy groups, where do they fit into this? Because it sounds to me like this is an institutional response rather than a community response.
Yes. So the first part of the response is institutional. It's the frontline workers. The second part of the response is a community response. So what we have built into our response plan is that once we have an initial response, so this is an immediate response as far as the emergency goes, what we need to do to respond to the emergency. The second part of that is utilizing the drug strategy and its member agencies, which we currently have almost 50 of, to get information out to people on the streets. So people who use substances, support people who use substances, agencies with workers who are in direct contact with the community. So that is the second part, where we send alerts out to the community.
So, all right, but maybe you can help me with this, because mm-hmm. this sounds to me like a top-down approach, an institutional approach coming down at the people who are in crisis, mm-hmm. and the people who are on the front lines that are not emergent, not institutional responders. So what happens about the grassroots up? Where do the addicts come in? Where do the community workers come in? Where does the community itself get its voice to say, here's what we think needs to be done before we get into, okay, here's, you know, what's coming down, and here's what your guys are going to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good question. So I think that comes in various modalities. So as Kathy alluded to with the community response portion of the HKPR district response plan, we will look to bring in kind of more community-based reporting mechanisms where maybe we have something available on websites or a call-in number where folks in the community can directly respond or report an opioid-related incident. So that's one way that we'll kind of see that community perspective piece being shared on a wider scale. But also part of that community response mechanism, we'll be working very closely, as Kathy said, with our community partners who often work directly with
So who are some of these? Could you give us some examples in Northumberland?
So one would be Greenwood Coalition. I mean, they're right in Port Hope. They're pretty active in Cobourg, so they have a really good understanding of the folks that are living in Cobourg and Port Hope and throughout the Northumberland County. They know them by name. So we really will start to leverage those relationships that our partner agencies have already and to bring folks in to really see what they are seeing personally on the streets, to understand what information is most helpful for people in the community, and what are the kind of responses people would like to see. So these are all kind of mechanisms for community engagement that we would like to build into this process.
Okay, you mentioned one that's from Port Hope. Can you mention some others that are maybe in Cobourg or out in the rural parts of the county, some others, just so that we have a clear picture of how wide this is?
Mm-hmm. Sure, we have Forecast as well as Parn. We also have the
Corner. Okay, so Forecast is what?
They do addiction treatment.
Okay, and Parn is what?
Is the Peterborough AIDS Resource Network, and they're based out of Peterborough, but they have a 4-county mandate. So
okay.
they do with
outreach workers in each of the counties.
Okay.
Yeah, so we do have also Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center here in mm-hmm. Cobourg. The Northumberland Community Counseling Center, the Community Health Centers of Northumberland, as well as mental health services in Campbellford Memorial Hospital, as well as Northumberland Hills Hospital, the Canadian Center for Addiction, and Megan already mentioned Greenwood Coalition. So these agencies are also agencies that you can get naloxone kits from.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a good chance now to step back. We kind of dove in deep really mm-hmm. quickly, but I thought that was important to follow through. Let's just step back a moment and let's try and get a broader understanding of what the drug strategy is and what your group does mm-hmm. in terms of, you keep mentioning the four pillars, and one of the key to that is harm reduction. So let's talk about, first of all, what are the guiding principles behind the work that you're doing at the drug strategy?
Yeah, so I mean, the guiding principles, I guess, were set as a collective standpoint. So we look at things like being very evidence-informed. We look at things about having community engagement. We look at things like working from a harm reduction or a risk mitigation strategy. So when I speak to that, I mean that we're not necessarily telling people to stop using substances, but we're really focusing on the harm aspects of using substances and how can we risk or reduce those risks or harms associated with that use rather than reducing the use itself.
Okay, but you mentioned four pillars. So harm reduction is one. Mm-hmm. There's three others, isn't there?
There is, yeah. So just to take a step back here, the four pillars is kind of an evidence-based model that's been used both provincially and with a federal drug strategy as well. Mm-hmm. So the four pillars are harm reduction, prevention, and education. So we have Kathy from the health unit kind of acting representation for that. Treatment being the third pillar, and then the justice and enforcement. So really there's a recognition here that each of those pillars alone is not enough to really combat complex substance issues in the community, but rather it's a focused, strengths-based approach of all four pillars in operation together.
Okay. When we talk about harm reduction, often people sort of, or not often, maybe people might say, wait a minute, you know, we're talking about supporting drug addiction. Shouldn't mm-hmm. you just be taking all of it away from you? So why do we have naloxone kits? Why mm-hmm. do we have needle exchange programs? I don't believe we have a safe injection site in Northumberland.
We do not.
No. So, but why take those strategies? Why not take it away from them? Some people might say that's a good way of dealing with this. Mm-hmm. Why isn't it? Why do we talk about harm reduction?
We talk about harm reduction as being a very pragmatic approach. So this is an approach or an area of programming that's been widely studied in various countries and also in Canada and provincially as well. So when we look at kind of the opposite, so when we look at other ways of working or solving substance use issues, often we looked at things like enforcement or criminalization. So people that possessed or used substances could be criminalized for their use and put into jail, for instance. But a harm reduction approach looks at more of a humanizing approach and looks at the person and the various complex factors for why they engage in substance use in the first place. So
So if we do take this approach, then why don't we have an overdose prevention site or also called safe injection sites?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have those in Northumberland?
Yeah, so they've actually, under the new government, changed names again. So they're consumption and treatment sites or services.
Okay.
And again, this is something that's in the evidence base to reduce the risk of overdose deaths as well as transmission of other diseases or like HIV or Hep C. But I think one reason that we don't have it locally, perhaps, is just because we really do have this big rural geography or this dispersion of people, but also services as well. So where consumption and treatment services are most effective often is in urban centers when you have this centralization of services and people. But when you look at more rural geographies, you might look at other effective approaches like mobile resources or outreach services. So things that are actually meeting people where they're at and not necessarily being concentrated in one area.
Do we have any of those services here in Northumberland?
We do actually, yeah. So through the naloxone program and the harm reduction works program that's facilitated through the health unit, we have various satellite sites throughout each of the communities in Northumberland County. So Kathy just named a few of our sites there. We have also outreach workers through PARN and Forecast and other agencies that actually go to people where they are to meet those needs. And then we also had in the past couple of years a mobile site. So we actually had a van driving around able to distribute services and support people in their more rural needs.
One of the other services that I know is offered up in Peterborough, but we don't have here, is something called RAM. It stands for, I guess, Rapid Access Addiction Medicine. And I guess there are clinics, and I know there's, again, I said there was one in Peterborough, but they offer quick access to medications for substance use and long-term support. Why don't we have one of those in Northumberland? Because I understand they're quite effective in helping people.
Mm-hmm. So the RAM clinic is very similar to these safe consumption and treatment sites. And the RAM clinic that is in Peterborough is also available to HKPR residents. So when we look at the information that comes through from the RAM clinic, and actually it's the Central East Local Health Integration Network that is currently responsible for the RAM clinics. So our area actually has the one in Whitby as well as the one in Peterborough. Again, also based on population and where the population of at-risk people are concentrated and where services are available, because that's the other part of this is accessing services. So we know for the RAM clinic that is the RAM clinics that are available for our residents, that they have had over 1,200 people looking for assistance. So this is with the addiction treatment medicine. And they've had over 400 people who've been treated for opioid use disorders. So this was for 2018. So we also know, and although we're here speaking about opioids most specifically today, just to also acknowledge that the RAM clinics, as well as some of the other treatments, don't just focus on opioids, it's all substance use. So for the RAM information, we do know that alcohol use still remains to be the primary substance of choice and also the primary substance that is being treated for use. So it's 41. So for the RAM clinic, it was 41% for alcohol use compared to 29% for opioid use and 29% for other substances.
I understand why governments and administrators go to a regionalized system to provide services, because it maybe in their minds is cost effective and maybe it seems more efficient. But at the same time, if I'm having a crisis, mm-hmm. To have to go to Peterborough, have to go to Whitby, as you've described, it's not across the street. Okay. Or even to come across the county, I know for some people it is difficult. So why is there not more of these kinds of services here locally? I mean, I know you argue that, you know, we don't have the population, but at the same time, if we have the problem, why mm-hmm. don't we have these services here so that it's easier for people to connect, it's easier for people to access these services?
I think that's a great question, and I wish I could provide the answer to it. And I wouldn't say I would argue about it being a population. That's certainly what the funders and what the government has argued as being precipitating factor to where the services are located and for regionalizing services. I know there are organizations in our area who certainly do outreach, and they do try to reach, because we do have such a rural geography with our health unit going from Campbellford all the way up to Hastings, up to Halliburton and Minden. So we do have outreach workers through different organizations that do service those areas. And certainly if there are listeners in the more rural area who would like to have access to treatment, contacting any of the partner agencies or even the health unit to get directed to those services would be great.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm talking to Megan Damon, the coordinator of the HKLN Drug Strategy, and Catherine McDonald, the Substance and Harm Reduction Coordinator for the Health Unit. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guests today are Megan Damon, the coordinator of the HKLN Drug Strategy, and Catherine McDonald, Substance and Harm Reduction Coordinator at the Health Unit. We're talking about the drug strategy to address opioids in our community. Just before we took the break, we started to unpack the four pillars of the strategy that is being implemented by your organization, Megan. And you mentioned prevention and education, treatment and justice. We hadn't talked about those. What do we mean when we talk about prevention and education? How does that component work?
Yeah, so I think when we consider prevention and education, we look a little bit more upstream, if you will. So we look at kind of preventing substance use maybe in total, or we look at delaying the onset of someone's first use. But I think what becomes around prevention so effective is this education piece. So just making sure that individuals have informed or have the information to make informed choices around their own substance use.
Catherine, I know that the health unit plays a really important role in the prevention and education piece in this strategy. Can you talk a bit about the programs that the health unit offers?
Sure. So in prevention and education, what the health unit does is we provide supports for schools, for example. So curriculum supports. We'll put together lists of resources, important messaging. We also share campaigns that might be provincial or federal, or create local campaigns. So it's important to get the information to parents of young children, and then to school children, teenagers, so that they are getting the messaging from as early as possible and throughout their lives, so that they're getting a better understanding, a more comprehensive understanding of the issue. So then with the prevention and education, it also is the broader community prevention and education as well. So it might not just be about preventing use, but also educating the public around substance use issues and stigma and those sort of issues as well. So it's kind of like the two-prong approach, where we would like to prevent substance use from happening, but then we'd also like to increase the awareness of the community, of the complexity of substance use issues.
How old would you say a child needs to be to start to talk about opioid use in that context?
I think substances in general, I think children from very young ages start to hear about smoking and how smoking is bad, and throughout. And I think grade school is when they start to be exposed to substances.
So what grade would we be talking about?
I don't know. That's a...
Let's say 3 to 5.
I was going to say grade 4 would probably be where,
So we're talking about young people 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah,
because even when we look at something, so I think up until kind of this crisis of opioids, if you name it that, we looked at prescription opioids all the time. And when we consider the availability of opioid prescriptions in the household, for instance, and children or youth being exposed to that, either from a parent taking it or a grandparent, so even just that exposure of something in the household, I think it's really important to have those conversations.
Yeah, so one of the campaigns we actually participate in is the Medication Take Back campaign, which is to inform community members about the dangers of having old prescriptions or even current prescription opioids in the home, where people can have access to them who shouldn't. So just reminding people to return those old prescriptions for disposal at pharmacies. We do know that youth, that is the primary where youth often get their opioids from, is prescription medications.
Yeah, because I think there's a piece of when something's available or legal, it must be safe. And so it's really important to have those conversations with youth. And I think especially with cannabis legalization, that's especially important. So just because it is legal at a certain age to access and use cannabis products, that doesn't necessarily deem it safe.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, when we think about opioids, we're all often thinking about people in the community who use substances, and we're not necessarily thinking about the Tylenol 3 that has codeine in it, or the cough medicine that has codeine in it. Those are opioid prescriptions, and I know anecdotally, just from what I'm hearing, is that often youth are using things like cough medicine that's left over from strep throat or other sore throats, and it has codeine in it, so that's what they're using. So it's just for parents to be really diligent about what is in the home.
Well, one of the things that's come evident in past interviews has been the fact that there is no demographic that opioids impact. And in mm-hmm. fact, it's rather shocking, the range and just the income, background, all those things. You know, we're not talking about a stereotypical addict. We're talking about people who have had been given pain prescriptions, adults, mm-hmm. who then become addicted. Yep. What educational things are you doing to educate people more about that?
I think one of the most important things in our messaging is to communicate exactly that it's not, that it is widespread, that it can be anybody, any age, any socio economical level. It can be anybody. It can be children. It can be elderly people. And certainly prescription medications have been part of this whole opioid crisis, is the previous availability of opioid prescriptions that then led to the pullback of opioid prescriptions, which led to an increase in the illicit market of opioids. So it's very, very complicated, and but certainly, and with naloxone as well, important that people who are using opioids for medical purposes are also at risk of overdose. So when we hear overdose stats, it's not necessarily just people who are using substances recreationally. It can be people who are using opioids for legitimate medical prescriptions and can take too much or forget that they've taken a dose, those sort of things. And so we have to consider those people as well. So it's a very wide range of people.
Now, do you have any specific programs, though, that are targeted to this particular group as part of your education initiative?
A lot of the education is kind of up and coming. So a lot of it is in the planning process currently, and we are targeting all people.
Yeah. Another thing that happens, and it's kind of a whoever wants to do it kind of thing, but pharmacies have the ability now, when they dispense an opioid prescription, they'll often also dispense a naloxone kit along with that. So just to show that the two kind of go hand in hand, regardless of age and socioeconomic status. So
treatment is another one of the pillars that we talk about. And can you describe now how that works in the drug strategy?
Yeah, so we work very closely with Forecast. So Forecast is the Four Counties Addiction Agency in each of the counties here locally. And really, I would say that their treatment approaches are quite diverse. And I think that's really pays tribute to the complexity of substance use. Not only are they kind of seeking doing services in the office space around counseling, but they're actually going out into community. They're partnering very well with other housing agencies or other hospitals, where we kind of see some more complex issues arising. And I think what's really great about Forecast is that they operate from this harm reduction approach too. So they're not necessarily offering a medication or counseling as soon as someone walks into their office, but rather they're really hearing the needs and making their approach very patient-centered. So if a patient comes in and their first immediate need is around housing or where they're going to get their first meal, those are kind of some needs that they will address before they even start to talk about someone's concerns for their substance use.
Which brings us, I guess, to the complexity, another level of complexity to this already very complex problem, and that is some of the socioeconomic factors, mm-hmm. like housing, poverty, all those kinds of things that add layers to, mm-hmm. to trying to treat people. How does either of your organizations work to integrate those aspects beyond just simply trying to treat the opioid addiction?
So at the health unit, we have nurses who are, they're social determinants of health nurses, and their focus is on applying that lens to everything that we do. So we participate with other organizations to do, actually we'll be talking about some of the things that are kind of coming up. But we do have these nurses who specifically engage with community organizations, different levels of government, to try to help to address these broader determinants of health that then kind of feed into substance use. So our organization does try to look at the whole picture when it comes to complex health issues like substance use, and try to address the all of the factors rather than and just focus on the substance use.
So how do you do that then? I mean, we can talk about it, but how does that actually play out on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
So if I come in, how would what you just talked about, how mm-hmm. would I be treated, or what how would it would that interaction work? I guess I'm trying to understand.
It's not always necessarily just from an individual interaction level. It's from a public policy level. So it could be advocating for more social housing. It could be advocating for more access to healthcare services. So those broader kind of higher level social policy issues to try to get more access.
Who are either of your organizations working with within the justice system to achieve the goals of the fourth pillar, which is justice and enforcement?
Mm-hmm. So I think where we are most effective, so this kind of pillar is similar across the province and the country of the enforcement, but I thought it was really particularly important for our drug strategy to add justice to that. Because we're focusing on interventions that kind of strengthen community safety, but at the same time really provide individualized supports for the people in the community. So we have some really great programs here locally in Northumberland with the MHART, so that's the Mental Health Response Team. And so what their primary focus is instead of kind of going in from an enforcement standpoint, they go in with a call perhaps that's more mental health related or more complexities around substance use related, and that their approach is to address that first and not necessarily laying a charge or going that route, but rather doing more of a restorative justice approach where we look what are some better ways for this individual or what are some other services that this person might benefit from more than maybe just necessarily an enforcement perspective.
Funding is often a critical piece in any type of initiative like the both of what you're doing. First of all, with the announcement around health units and the threat of cutbacks to the health unit, how much do you think this might jeopardize your initiatives around opioids and drug strategies?
So we are still waiting to hear specifically what's happening with our budget. The government did announce last week that they would be going ahead with the public health cuts for 2020. So we're still waiting to see what that's going to look like. And of course, with the announcement of the amalgamations as well, it was announced that we would be amalgamated with Peterborough, Durham, and potentially Hastings, Prince Edward County. So there are going to be consultations coming up where it looks like some of those borders will be adjusted. So unfortunately for right now, it's really we're waiting to find out. Hopefully that we won't be, this programming is so important, so hopefully it won't be hit too hard. We do get specific funding that comes for these programs, so hopefully that continues.
And how about you, Megan?
Yeah, so I would say that for drug strategies kind of across Ontario, they're funded in different ways. So sometimes they work very closely with their municipal councils or their county councils.
And how's yours done?
Well, ours is a little bit different. So we kind of almost did a little bit of a pilot project. So we wanted to see what having a coordinated drug strategy for this three-county region would really look like. So we did, so the pillar partners, so the four pillar partners in 2016 applied for the Ontario Trillium Foundation grant and were successful at that time. So that's a three-year grant. And we're just actually coming to the end of that in December of this year.
So what happens after that?
So we are working very diligently with our partners, part of the drug strategy, and we're really trying to see what makes most sense for the structure or the form of the drug strategy for the future. So we've had a lot of luck locally in local communities where this is an importance and this is a priority for them. So we're just seeing at what ways we can kind of collaborate further.
So what numbers are we talking about for an annual budget then to keep this going?
So annual budget for our drug strategy right now operates just under $100,000.
So it would be up to Northumberland or the three counties involved to come up with $100,000 total to keep this going.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's a lot of cost effectiveness into that budgeted amount as well. I think the evidence shows us, and from past experience, kind of having this coordination piece where we're not necessarily duplicating services, we aren't reinventing the wheel in each individual community, but we're able to really do a strength-based approach when we are doing a collective response and a collaborative response.
Okay, so one of the things coming up then is in September, which is like 3 days away, we're going to see this meeting of the task force at an institutional level to bring together to see how we move forward. But I also know that tomorrow is International Overdose Awareness Day, and I know that you're participating in some of this.
Yes, we are. So this year, it was kind of planned and coordinated from our partners at Greenwood Coalition. So the event's being held at the Coburg Farmers Market from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then both Kathy and myself will be there representing our organizations as well. So we'll be doing things like naloxone training, getting the community familiar with some of resources that exist in the community around overdose prevention and naloxone. We're doing this really cool thing called Sidewalk Talk, and really it's just a non-barrier community listening project. So folks of us have been trained in active listening, so we'll just be sitting down with folks in a really comfortable way, encouraging them to come up to us and talk about any topics they'd like.
I also understand you're involved with the Unity Project as well.
We are.
Can you tell us about
that? Yeah, so the Unity Project really came about because we were looking at these really kind of upstream prevention-based approaches, but that were more community-focused. So I think that's one area need or priority with the drug strategy is that we wanted to get out into the community and really do some work there. So that's where the Unity Project came up. And the Unity Project, it's really this life-scale art installation project, and you don't need to be creative to be a part of it. So it's really just community coming and participating in the project. And what it's meant to do is really show some of the identifiers or labels that we give ourselves or individuals in the community, and to really find some common place there. So can we put a humanness to some of these identifiers? Like one of the identifiers says, I sometimes feel lonely. And do other people identify with that as well in the community? And how can we as a community really come together to support each other?
Going forward then, what has to happen and on what timeline in order to address what you guys have described as a crisis within our community?
So the first step that I will be involved in will be the task force. So we want to finalize our opioid response plan and bring that task force together and get a good comprehensive plan in place of how to address the crisis within our communities, especially if we have a cluster event of overdoses. So that's kind of my primary focus currently, and continuing to distribute and educate around naloxone. So if anybody's interested in naloxone kits, they can call the health unit for information. Or there is a government website. If you Google, where can I get a free naloxone kit? It's an interactive map that'll show you exactly where in your community kits are available. And and the health unit will continue on with the needle exchange program. We have safer inhalation and safer injection supplies that are available to people who use substances. And we have community partners that help to distribute those. So those are the main programs that we have going on right now as far as harm reduction go.
And how about you, Megan? What's your timeline and what do you hope to get done before December?
Yeah, so I think our hard deadline is actually at the end of this year. So we'll be looking at ways that we can engage in more collaborative approaches throughout the counties and then the individual communities as well. I think it's really helpful that we start asking questions about why and why things are the way they are. How did they get here? So we start to explore some of these questions rather than necessarily pointing the finger. And I think that will be kind of a more strengths-based approach that we can definitely continue taking.
I want to thank both of you for coming out today and talking to us. It's been truly enlightening, and it's good to hear all these good things that both of your organizations are doing. And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front line and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. Now, the impact of opioids on people is never so real as when we hear stories from people who face this situation directly or from family and friends, and those who have maybe lost someone to an opioid overdose, or those who are trying to help a person facing an addiction to this drug. I'm interested in your stories. If you are willing to share your stories, please feel free to go to my Facebook page or my website and share as much as you're comfortable giving. If you find an appropriate place to comment, write freely, or you can email me directly at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. We need to hear all the stories from as many perspectives as we can, so please do that, and thank you. I would also like to thank all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my posts of the interviews that have gone on before this one. Social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I am grateful to those who demonstrated you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online. So thank you to all of you. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you would like to listen to this or share this or any podcast, please check my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.